to today's telephone conference of Allianz SE on the occasion of the publication of the financial results of the first quarter of 2020. For your information, this conference will be recorded. At this point, I'd like to hand over to Good morning and welcome from my side to today's telephone conference on the results of Allianz SE Group in the first quarter 2020. As usual, our CFO, Giulio Terzariol, will guide you through the quarterly results and then answer your questions. And with this, I would like to hand over to Mr. Terzariol. Yeah, good morning, says Mr. Terzariol. I'm delighted, as always, to present to you the figures of Allianz for the first quarter. Before I enter into the figures, I hope that you're all healthy, and not just you, but also your families and your friends and next of kin, and that's the most important result, of course. But with this, I would like to switch to page 3, where we have the most important KPIs for the quarter. Overall, the first quarter 2020 was, of course, not a normal quarter, but I would say that in spite of a difficult environment, we've kept ourselves in a good position. Total revenues grew by close to 6%, driven by asset management and life health. The operating profit went down 650 million, but of course this can be traced back to the effects of COVID-19. On this slide, you can see the effect of around 700 million from this, 300 from life health insurance. That doesn't have anything to do with mortality or other things like this, but this is the effect of the market developments on the capital margin. And then 400 million in property and casualty. These are losses in the actuarial area in underwriting. And later on, when we talk about P&C, I will explain a little bit more what's behind these figures. But overall, the 2.3 billion operating profit, if we take them and adjust them for the 700 million effects from COVID-19, that would bring us back to an excellent underlying performance again of 3 billion underlying operating profit. The shareholders' net income, as was expected, has been influenced by the development in operating profit. Here, once again, if we adjust this for the effects of COVID, we would have had a shareholder's net income on the previous year's level. So overall, of course, there is the negative impact from COVID-19, but the underlying performance was quite solid, actually, and we had to overcome some one-off effects, but all in all, it was a robust result in the first quarter 2020. Now on page 5, you can see the shareholders' equity according to IFRS and our solvency ratio. The shareholders' equity according to IFRS went down approximately 5 billion, and that was due above all to the development of unrealized gains from capital investments, which doesn't come as a surprise if you look at the market developments in the first quarter. Solvency ratio went down 23 percentage points and is now at 190%, which is still a very good level. And that was due to the reduction of the solvency ratio was above all due to the developments in the equity markets. And if we go to page 7, we can see the drivers behind this solvency ratio development. And all in all, what's important is that the operating organic capital generation is solid with plus 5%, the business evolution, and that speaks for the sustainability in the development of our solvency ratio. And then you can also see that the effects from market developments had a huge impact with minus 28 percentage points, and that was above all due to the development of the interest rates and also to the volatilities of the equity markets. But all in all, a solvency ratio of 190%, which is a good level, a strong level, and is also a good basis if we have any opportunities, if we see any opportunities in the future. The situation seems to stabilize when it comes to the capital markets, but it's still early days and there might be additional turbulences and volatilities, but with the solvency ratio, we're well prepared for volatilities in the capital market. With this, I would like to switch to the individual segments, starting on page 9. Overall, in property and casualty, we had solid growth, which is important to us, and growth rate was based on price developments and less on volume increases. That is usually good and promising for the stability of our business. And if we then look at the individual countries and segments, you can see that we have good price dynamism in the UK and also in Spain, even though the Spanish volume decreased, so that's why you see decreasing growth rate. And then AGCS, we even had double-digit price increases. In Italy and with Euler Hermes, you see rather negative growth rates. That was especially due to COVID-19. Euler Hermes, the negative growth rate stems from the COVID effect. And in Italy also, until February, the figures for Italy were quite flat when it comes to the growth rate. And then in March, in line with the lockdown, the premiums in Italy decreased. But all in all, 1.8% internal growth from price development. So we're quite satisfied with the development in P&C in this regard. Page 11 shows the development of the operating profit in P&C. And our operating profit decreased by around 400 million or 29%. And that was due to the development in the underwriting results and the development of our combined ratio. As you can see, the combined ratio rose by 4 percentage points, but that showed the COVID impact that put a burden of 400 million on the underwriting result. And if we translate this into the loss ratio, this is 2.5% of the loss ratio. And in addition to this, we had a higher burden from natural catastrophes of 3.6% compared to the 1.1% in 2019. That is to say, if we look at the loss ratio for the ongoing year and adjusted for the COVID and the higher net cat impact, then the 1 percentage point better than last year. So in this, you can see that we have an improvement in this regard, and also the expense ratio improved compared to the previous year. And if we adjust this for the effects of COVID, it would have been even better. So all in all, we have an improvement of 1.8 percentage point of our combined ratio if we adjust it for the one-off effects. So all in all, a good underlying performance, but of course we have to deal with the effects of COVID-19, but for the sustainability of our business, we have to look at the underlying performance and adjust that or eliminate these special factors. Now page 13, you can see the development in the different OEs. The combined ratio in the UK stands out, in AGCS and Australia as well. So in the case of Australia, where the AGCS where combined ratio is above 100% in the UK, and in Australia this is due to the natural catastrophes in the UK and also in Italy, or also in Australia, where we had a high burden of natural catastrophes. So taking the nat cats out, the combined ratios would be closer to our expectations. In HCS, we also see a high combined ratio of 117.5%, and the reason in this case are not natural catastrophes, which are higher than the previous year, but not higher than we would expect for HCS, but Here we see the COVID-19 burden, as I mentioned before. All in all, we have 400 million of losses from COVID and more than 200 million of this from AGCS. So if we look at, if we adjust the AGCS result for the COVID effect, that would have led to a combined ratio of 100% at AGCS, and that would have been in line with our expectations. Then another comment, the combined ratio of Germany was affected by COVID by around 4 percentage points. So we've had a little less than 100 million in losses due to COVID-19. So out of the 300, a large part of the 400 million stems therefore from HECS and Germany, of those 400 million burdens that we have overall from COVID-19. Now page 15 shows the investment result in PNC. We have a decline of around 70 million here, which was mainly due to fluctuations in currencies, and that is something that occurs in situations like in the first quarter. But all overall, the current yield remains stable, and with this, I would like to switch to page 17 and talk about the figures for our life and health insurance business. First of all, you can see that the new business margin grew by more than 2.7%. Say in the first quarter, we didn't have any or just minimal effects of the COVID-19 crisis when it comes to production. And then what's important, the new business margin, as said, remains stable at 2.7%. And if you look at the market conditions, that is quite a good result, actually. Of course, last year we were at 3.5%, but interest rates 1 year ago in Europe were up 80 basis points compared to today's level. And in the U.S., the interest rates were even 100 basis points higher than today. So overall, if you look at the development in the interest rates, the new business margin of 7% is a good, shows a good performance, and we continue to work on our business mix, and you can see the production of capital intensive products declined significantly to 11%, so in this sense, we keep on making progress towards capital-efficient products. On page 19, we show the development of the operating profit in life health, and that went down by around 300 million or 25%. That stems from the development in the capital market, and of course, that was linked to COVID-19. In the month of March, the volatility in the markets was extremely high, and that, for example, drove down the investment margin, and there are also effects on the impact of change in that DAC. So these effects stem above all from Allianz Life in AZ Life in the U.S. The additional cuts in the valuable annuities business and other units also had some impairments to deal with, but the main part of the reduction stems from AZ Life. So operating profit was declining as could be expected in such a situation, but a result of more than 819 million in operating profit, we once again prove that our life and health segment has a great deal of resilience to offer. Page 21, you can see the selected units when it comes to the value of new business. Here we have a decline of around 20%, and that was mainly due to the changes in the margin, but as I mentioned before, the margin against the backdrop of the current situation was still good, and overall, we're quite satisfied with the development of our profitability of new business. Now, when it comes to the operating profit, you can see that most of the OEs posted a decline. I already talked about AZ Life in the United States with a decrease of 78%. And what also stands out, Germany Health, PKV, you can see the effects of impairments. And in the case of Spain, you know, we had the final consolidation of our share in Banco Popular. So that was a one-off effect. The other units, some of them had higher operating profits, or we have a decline compared to the previous year, which against the current backdrop was still quite good. Page 23 is a technical slide, but what we want to show on this page is that the difference between ongoing yield and the guarantees has remained stable, which is important because it speaks for the sustainability of our investment margin and the our harvesting negative, where we see the effects of the hedging costs and AZ Life, and also the effects of the basic risk in AZ Life, and the impairments also are included here in this position, and a large part of this stems from the contribution or from the profit sharing under IFRS and was compensated through that. But what's important is that the gap between guarantees and current yield remains stable and this will set up over time. And with this, we come to page 25 and the development in asset management. At the end of March, we had 2.1 trillion assets under management, 1.6 trillion of that assets, third-party assets under management. And if you look at the development in the first quarter, you can see that the third-party assets under management went down around 8%, and we can also see that all asset classes and all regions were affected to a certain degree. You can see minus 13, it says more or less so. And so in a crisis, the size of which we had in the March of 2020, diversification doesn't really help if you have such a major crisis. Page 27, you can see the drivers behind this. Overall, we had net outflows of around 46 billion, and they almost all stem from March, because up to February we had net inflows, and then with the start of the crisis, it led to these outflows had a clear influence, and we have to say it's certainly not Allianz specific. We are just retail investors in the crisis, people just put the money aside, and we assume once the situation will stabilize that the inflows will return. And at the end of March and also in April, we were able to perceive a clear stabilization of the trend. Then if you look at the development of the market value in combined with the foreign exchange effects, the value went down around 80 billion, and that's got to do with the share price development and with the fact that the spreads increased. But in April, we already saw a certain recovery of around 40 to 50 billion. So there is a certain volatility in the market, and March was quite a low point, and we've recover to a certain degree, and we will need to see what happens over the course of the year. Page 29, that's quite interesting. I just said that the assets under management for third parties declined, but the revenues went up compared to the previous year's level, and what's behind this? Well, the average asset base in the first quarter of 2020 is significantly higher than the asset base which we had in the first quarter of 2019, 13% higher even, and the average asset base in the first quarter of 2020 is even higher than the asset base at the beginning of the year. So March was difficult, but all overall, the conditions for our asset management segment were quite good. And this means that revenues were significantly higher than a year ago, and that holds true above all for PIMCO. Allianz and AGI, we were a little bit weak in this regard. And if we look on page 31, that means that the operating profit significantly increased by close to 20%. That stems from PIMCO with a growth rate of over 20%. Revenues went up significantly. The cost-income ratio improved as well. And that explains the excellent performance in PIMCO. And in case of AGI, they also showed a good performance against the difficult backdrop, difficult environment. They posted a stable operating profit, and were also able to even decrease improve the cost-income ratio. So good performance in the first quarter. I would even say very good performance of asset management in the first quarter when it comes to the operating profit. Of course, we had then the volatilities towards the end of the quarter, but we've seen stabilization in the meantime, and we think that from an operating point of view, we're well set up, and if the market developments, we are also prepared for market developments in every direction, but the underlying performance is strong. Page 33 shows our corporate segments compared to the previous year. We have a change of around 60 million. That's due to foreign exchange volatilities, and that's also a contribution to a solidarity fund in France, which we contributed to in France, and that was posted here in the corporate segment. Page 35, as always, the non-operating items. All in all, we had impairment, especially on equities, but these were balanced by profits from the sale of, especially from the sale of our participations in the joint venture with Banco Popular. So on net, those two positions set each other off. Then we had restructuring costs, which were higher than in the previous year, counted improvements in not fees of 3% due to a special effect in the U.S. And on and all, I can say the below-the-line items didn't have that much of an effect on our annual surplus, or the whole effect on our income stands from the development in operating profit. And then finally, on page 37, yes, it certainly was a difficult environment, a challenging environment, but all in all, the performance of Allianz in the first quarter, from my point of view, was really robust. And if you just look at the figures, 43 billion in revenues, 2.3 billion euros in operating profit, 1.4 billion shareholders net income, and a solvency ratio of 190%. And in addition to this, we also paid 4 billion dividends and 750 million for our share buyback. So overall, as I said, a robust performance. And as always, I would like to thank our employees cordially for such a result. They've been doing a great job, especially under these difficult conditions. 80% of the people have to work remotely, and everything worked really well. So I would say that the efforts of our employees against the challenging backdrop have to be even more valued than usual. And I always value the work of our employees. And with this, I would like to hand over to your questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to ask a question, please press the asterisk button and the number one on your phone. Please make sure that you've muted your phone so that your signal can reach our devices. Should you realize that your question has already been answered, you can withdraw the question by pressing asterisk 2. Please remember, press asterisk 1 in order to ask a question. We will wait for a short moment to get your questions. Our first question today comes from Michael Flemig from Börsen-Zeitung. Please. Yes, good morning, Mr. Tessayol, Mr. Klotz. I've got three questions all together. First of all, on the operating results, Solvency II, and third, on asset management. As far as operating business is concerned, COVID, which, from your point of view, are the drivers for burdens at Allianz in the second and third quarter, as far as you can see that? Solvency II, 139%, has declined substantially. Have you secured that, and is that the lower limit that we're seeing at the moment? And third, asset management. How have flows and profitability in the second quarter developed so far in the second quarter? What do you expect for the future? Thank you. Yeah, first of all, good morning. As far as COVID is concerned, we expect, as far as the underwriting result is concerned, for the remainder of the year in the area of entertainment, we will certainly see losses. We would expect losses. We've booked a little bit more than 200 million in the first quarter, but these numbers will probably double in this area. So we're thinking about a burden of some 400 million in this area. And of course, there is a certain amount of uncertainty, but 400 million burden for entertainment is a solid figure, we think. Then business interruptions, we don't expect that there will be significantly more losses, but here and there, there will be the one or the other claim, the one or the other loss, but altogether it shouldn't be too bad. Euler Hermes credit insurance, we expect for this year that we're not going to book more operating profit than we've already booked. So we reckon with an operating profit of just below 100 billion, but this has to be taken with a grain of salt as well. And where we can also see a burden is at Allianz Partners, because people do not travel, so we have to assume that the revenues are lower than what we usually expect. On the other hand, we should also expect that the combined ratio is better. You can certainly discuss about rebates in some situations. The rebates are already priced into the contracts because they depend on kilometers as far as the auto business is concerned. And so far, you'll just have to see how the situation develops and how long the COVID situation, the COVID uncertainties will last. So it's very difficult at the moment to look into the future, but you have to reckon with these 400 million burden that we've seen in the first quarter. As far as the underwriting result is concerned, that might not be the whole burden that we're going to see, but until the end of the year, we will definitely also see further burdens for the future. As far as the solvency ratio is concerned, yes, the solvency ratio has decreased in part. That is to be expected in such an environment, because there are certain sensibilities to the development of the equity market. With 119, we're still pretty solid. It might go even lower if you go back to page 5. I don't know if you have page 5 in front of you. You can see the sensitivity in our solvency ratio. It can go down further. I think we're more secured than we were at the beginning of the year, and that also happens automatically because the hedges that we have, they are more effective if the shares go down further. share prices go down further. We also have some 5 billion of quoted shares that we sold. So altogether, we're more secured now. If you think about the sensitivity of towards shares, you know, at the beginning of this year it was 15 and now it's minus 12. So you see how the sensitivity declines basically, but it obviously doesn't go all the way down to zero. So, we always think in terms of ratios, but we should also think in capital. So the difference between our own equity and the capital requirements is 37 billion. So I think we do have a big buffer at 37 billion in order to withstand and to weather further shocks. And then you had a question about asset management as well. We've seen more stabilization even towards the end of March. Net outflows happened in the period when all the markets went crazy, basically. And in the second quarter so far, the net inflows have amounted to some 3 billion. That can obviously also change, but there is definitely some stability flowing in. And on top of that, the values of the investments that are under management have also increased because the share prices have developed positively. Also, the spreads have become greater. And so we've made up for some of the losses. So if we add some stability now, then that also applies to the prices. We're becoming a little bit bullish as far as asset management is concerned, but unfortunately, it's still a bit difficult to say at this time what might happen. Thank you very much, Tatsavion. Next question, please. We come to a question of Thomas Magenheim from Stuttgarter Zeitung, please. Good morning, everybody. I've got several questions. First of all, another question about what you just said, Mr. Tetzer-Yol. I've got a hard time counting what you see in future burdens, Q2, Q3, 700 million COVID burden we had in the first quarter. And what I seem to have understood from your answer is that you're expecting at least another 200 billion on top of that, but I might have gotten you wrong there. And beyond that, we cannot say at the moment. But can you give me another absolute figure in terms of what is certain to come in terms of additional burdens and absolute numbers for the next couple of quarters? Then in Germany, there is a lasting discussion about business closure policies where restaurant owners would like to renegotiate this Bavarian compromise, the so-called Bavarian compromise. Are you open towards that? Or do you say that we're expecting court cases? And the third question, you mentioned a solidarity fund in France. I assume that is the industry-wide assurance fund in France that I've heard about. Can you give us more information about that? And from your point of view, is something like that also appropriate for Germany? Would you stand behind that? Would you even be a driving force for something like that in Germany, or would you hold back? Okay, let's start maybe with the solidarity fund in France. That was not only for assurance, but that was for all companies. And therefore, we booked that in corporate. And so not only specifically for insurances, I would stand for such a solidarity fund, but for all companies. Not only for insurance, I'm not necessarily in favor of it, I would say. But I say if policy moves in that direction, I would respect such a decision. I wouldn't say across the board that I'm the one who suggests something like that. You have to see how Corona is going to impact the overall economy. And at the end of the day, these are decisions that politicians will have to make. And we will follow these decisions that are made by the politicians. I wouldn't advocate that. As far as business closure insurance is concerned, and you called it this Bavarian compromise, we think that this is a good solution, and therefore we think that such a solution should also be implemented on a federal level. There is openness towards other solutions. There is always openness, but we think this solution is a good solution. So Yeah, we think that this is really something that we should implement on a federal level across Germany. And then you also ask, and I understand your question, what about the absolute numbers? I'll give you a relative number here, and I would say it's very difficult to say, to give you an estimate for property casualty, but property casualty, I would expect that as far as the underwriting result is concerned, that we have to reckon with a decrease of operating profit versus our outlook of some 15 to 20%. Our outlook for property casualty was 5.6 billion, so we could expect 15 to 20% lower due to COVID-19 or due to the underwriting result. If you translate that into a burden for the operating profit for the group, that's about 10%. That amounts to about 10 or 14%. But then, sure, we also have to observe what might happen on the capital markets. So far, I've been relating to the underwriting result, and it is very difficult to say here what's going to happen to the capital markets. We might make up for some of the losses, and maybe the impact on the capital investment segment is not going to be so big, but we might also see further turbulences. You also have to expect that, given all the discussions about dividend payouts, that we might get less dividend. That is also going to be a burden, potentially. But as far as the underwriting result is concerned, I can tell you that our expectation is that we're expecting some 15 to 20% below our outlook for property and casualty. For the group, that would make some 10%. Thank you very much. You're welcome. The next question, please.
Okay, the next question is by Alexander Hübner of Reuters. Please go ahead. Good morning. Well, that was almost the question that I wanted to ask. It's almost what my predecessor asked, so let me just check back. I understood correctly that when it comes to the underwriting result, a group-wide, you're 10% below your plans, and anything that might come in addition would be burdens from capital investments. And can you also give us an outlook, or don't you assume that there will be any effects on life, health, and asset management in the underwriting result until the end of the year? What do you say about this? Well, in life, health, we don't foresee any burdens on the underwriting side. Well, I would say the 100 million deviation compared to the previous year in our life health segment is a deviation from plan, and I wouldn't assume that we'll be able to catch this to catch up on this. There could be more recovery in the next month, which would lead to the fact, if stability returns, that we can reach our plans, but that we catch up the 100 million, ooh, we would need a strong recovery, which I wouldn't assume that we get this kind of strong recovery now immediately. But I would expect that the rest of the year should be in line with our expectations. And when it comes to asset management, I would say that catching up will be difficult. It will depend on the behavior of the market, so it's not I wouldn't exclude the possibility that we could have a full recovery, but I would assume that we remain slightly below the outlook of 2.7 billion, but not significantly below this. But of course, everything I say here might change in a week's time. You know, what we've learned in the crisis is that you make a statement and then suddenly something happens and it all becomes superfluous. So usually we have to wait for the end of the next 3 months and to say something, because in this situation 3 days can change everything. But I hope that I've been able to convey a certain picture of our estimations and assessment right now. So let me just back to the 3.7 was the original goal for asset management. No, 2.7. Okay, thank you. Next question, please. Our next question is Stefan Bayer of DPAFX. Good morning. So my questions have all become more or less superfluous as well, but there's one thing I didn't fully understand. Credit insurance, you said the profit of the first quarter will remain more or less the profit for the year. So, could you also tell us what the losses are compared to this so that we could include this into the damages that we had in other areas? And then a question about the Olympics here. You're not part of the pool with the ISV, but HECS has some losses to expect around the Olympics. Could you tell us what this will be about, because this must be easier to calculate than what the competitors have to deal with a large contract? Okay, when it comes to the Olympics, here we expect a low double-digit million amount, so below 20 million euros. We're not so that exposed. And then when it comes to Euler Hermes, yes, it's right. Until the end of the year, we expect profits more or less as in the first quarter, and of course you expect higher losses, but also the revenues are also much lower, so the economics and credit insurance in such a situation have to be rethought to a certain degree. It's not just the damages might be higher, but it's also the fact that due to the agreements that we've entered into with the governments, that we reduce our income, and what happens then is that the underwriting result more or less approaches zero, but then we also have some profit from capital investment. So that is the situation in credit insurance. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Then the next question, please. We'll come to a question from Jean-Philippe Lacour from AFP News Agency, please. Yeah, good morning. With a view to this controversy in France between where there is talk about aggressive, unfair practices on the part of competitors, because the bank decided to compensate operating losses. How do you go about that in Bavaria? There is this agreement, apparently. So what you do in Bavaria is apparently negative or damaging. Can you explain to me what that means? And would this Bavaria agreement generally be expanded? Is that already something that is used on a federal level? Is that something that is offered to customers abroad, maybe? And maybe in summary, once again, you mentioned this global alliance with AGCS, Euler Hermes, and all the partners together. That was in the presentation. You say that you're expecting further negative impacts due to COVID-19, both in terms of revenues and results. Can you give us a summary figure there, potentially? Thank you. The first question you have to repeat for me, because that was pretty difficult to understand. What about France? Crédit Mutuel, this bank, this cooperative bank, they decided that operating losses due to COVID-19 are compensated, and that is obviously something that raised a lot of ruckus in the remainder of the segment. So there's a big controversy, and I think Alliance is also impacted, but for us that is very, very difficult. We've got this pandemic and we pay out losses if we have coverage, and if our policies do not cover, we don't pay. As a rule, we will pay, and it could always be the case that we find solutions together with interest groups and associations, and in case of doubt, you have to discuss things. But our position is whether there is coverage or not. If it's covered, there is no discussion, we pay. And if it's not covered in such cases, we're going into a direction that these are special cases. It could always be the case that you have exceptions in certain cases. With a view to France, I'm not aware of moving in that direction, so that hasn't been a topic for us so far. As far as this question of AGCS, Euler Hermes and Alliance Partners is concerned, what is the burden? I would like to refer to what I said earlier on once again. These 15% to 20%, as far as the underwriting result in property and casualty, basically comes from this global alliance. So that is the impact that we're gonna see. That this is a statement that comes from Euler Hermes, because we have fewer profits than in the previous year. And also Alliance Partners, the revenues go down, the losses go up, and that has an impact on the underwriting result, obviously. So generally speaking, the burden and the operating profit comes from the global lines, and that's why we made that comment. Thank you. You're welcome. Then the next question, please. We'll come to Anna Genthrup from Versicherungsmonitor with the next question, please. Yes, good morning. I would like to come back to this Olympic question. Can you tell us a little bit about to what extent you're impacted by canceled events and to what amount? The second question is about share buybacks and dividends. Have the current results any impact on that? The first question was the Olympic, the burden. That is less than 20 million. That is the burden that we reckon with. You also have to consider that the Olympic Games have been postponed and they have not been cancelled completely. But altogether, we're not so exposed as far as the Olympic Games are concerned. So altogether, in the entertainment segment, we have significant losses that goes up to 400 million, can go up to 400 million, as I said earlier on. That is our estimate at the moment. Having said that, the Olympic Games will not have a significant impact on us, or at least not a direct impact. And then your other question was whether the situation will have an impact on the share buyback. We basically have suspended the second tranche of the share buyback program. And that's got not so much to do with our figures, because our liquidity situation or our solvency situation is pretty solid. We're in a good position. But of course, there is a certain debate ongoing with a view to dividend and share buyback. And you could say that the buyback is important, but it might not have the same significance as the dividend. So as far as the buyback is concerned, we've decided to suspend that and to wait to see how the situation develops. But I would say that the decision about the second tranche of the share buyback will also have something to do with the developments and the sentiments. It's not only about the numbers, but it's going to have a lot to do with the sentiment in the overall system. And what's also very important, the second tranche of the buyback has already been deducted from our figures. So based on a survivability calculation, we've already deducted that from our equity. But as I said, it depends on what sentiment is like overall, what the economy is going to do overall, and also the factors in our solvency ratio. Okay, thank you very much.
Then the next question, please. Next question by Christian Schnell of Handelsblatt. Yeah, good morning, gentlemen, and follow up on AGCS. Now, in the past, AGCS at this point was often criticized, and now the ongoing year was supposed to be the year of restructuring at AGCS, and the next year you wanted to return to the black, and has this now been halted, or what do you think about the plans for AGCS right now? Well, I would clearly say for 2020, AGCS will not make any profit. That is something we can anticipate right now, that due to the COVID-19 effect, we will not make any profit, so the combined ratio will be above 100% again, but I would make a clear differentiation because you have to look at the underlying performance, you have to monitor this and adjust to a certain degree for the COVID effect to see the true improvement in the OE. And what we can see and what we've seen so far is that AGCS also has developed in line with our expectations. I mentioned the price development, which was very good in the first quarter, and we also assume that the price development will continue. I mean, you could discuss that, of course, because, say, major customers might get in trouble, but I think the whole industry, the whole insurance industry, for years, didn't pose a good profitability when it comes to major claims, and COVID doesn't help in this regard. That's why I think the price development will remain strong, and I can tell you that the losses in entertainment, which we will have across the year 2020, that these losses can be recovered to a certain degree by price increases, and you just have to make a clear distinction. What's the effect of the coronavirus, which of course puts a burden on AGCS and will lead to the fact that there will not be a good result in 2020, but you have to distinguish between those effects and the underlying performance. That has to be clearly analyzed, and we're happy with the underlying development. Does that answer your question? Yeah, thank you. Okay, then we'll come to the next question, please. Thank you. We come to Olaf Storbeck of Financial Times. Good morning. Just two short questions. A question of understanding, first of all, about the effects of COVID on the operating profit, these 10%, which you hinted at, that refers to the 12 billion, the old profit goal, plus minus 500, right? Is that the way to understand this? And the second question regarding the Solvency II ratio, you're only 10 percentage points above your minimum target of 180. So how large is the danger from your point of view that you might fall below the threshold? And what would you do, or what would be the consequence if you fell under this line? So the first question, yeah, the 10% referred to the 12 billion. And let me say once again, that's the burden on the underwriting result, which we foresee at this point today, and things might change in property and casualty, and then we also have to see what happens on the capital markets. But if you've understood this correctly, the 10% refer to the 12 billion operating profit. Now, when it comes to the solvency ratio, the danger of the solvency ratio going below 180%. If you go to page 5, if you look at what might happen to the equity markets and the interest rates, if you think that the interest rates go down 25 base points and the equity markets 15 base points and the spread on the government bonds might go up, then we would fall below 180%, but that wouldn't be problematic as such, because during a time of crisis you can definitely fall below the 180. Then of course you want to over time return to a higher level, but when we had the old bandwidth, we had a bandwidth of 180 to 120%, and sometimes we went above the 220, which also meant that and there were also situations when that you come below 180 just as well. And I mean, if let me underline this, if you put this into capital, also a solvency ratio of 70% would mean close to 30 billion excess capital. So that is also what you have to see. And so it's possible that we might drop below 180%, and that would also be absolutely understandable and not a reason for major concern in any way. Thank you.
The next question, please. We'll come to Carsten Herz from Handelsblatt for the next question, please. Yes, good morning. Into the round. I've got another question about PIMCO. There are 43 billion customer money outflows, and at the same time, we've got an operating profit of almost 20%. Can you explain to me how that goes together? Yeah, you have to observe what the development was like in the course of the year 2019 of PIMCO, and that was very good, both in terms of net inflows and as well as in terms of the capital market developments. You're comparing the first quarter 2020 with the first quarter of 2019. It's true that in March the asset basis declined, and we also saw outflows, but when you take a look at the figures for 2019, you always have to consider that the asset basis in the first quarter of 2020 was 13% higher than in the first quarter of 2019, and that is thanks to the development in the last year. That clear? Did I make myself clear here? I'll do my very best to understand it. Yeah, just consider. Let's give you a pretty simple example. Let's say a share has a value in the first quarter of 2019 of 100. Then the share price increases to 130 by the year's end, and then it goes down by 10% again, so we're at 120 in the first quarter, and you do a fee on the share. The fee that you get for the shares in the first quarter of 2020 will be higher than the one you get for the first quarter 2019, even though the share price has decreased a little bit in the first quarter. You always have to think point to point. Okay, thank you very much. Then I would say we've got one more question in the German line. The next question, please. That is a follow-up question by Jean-Philippe Lacour from AFB News Agency. Yeah, thank you very much. I wanted to come back to France, but my question relates to the whole sector. The economic minister, Bolloré, has obviously hailed the insurers in France who contributed 100 million into the solidarity fund, but he also said that the insurance economy could do more. He thought that that the risks of all companies should have to be covered, and that should also be included in all the insurance policies, so that if there is another pandemic tomorrow, that all French companies have insurance coverage, and he expects specific suggestions within 6 months. Can you tell us what you think about that? I would say, as far as the topic pandemic is concerned, of course, we have to think about what we can do in future, because at the moment we've got a situation of a pandemic. Pandemics are usually not covered, but the customers will obviously say, I want to have coverage for a pandemic. I think the sensitivity for the topic will increase, and so we will have to try and find solutions, but it's naive to think that insurance companies can offer a pandemic coverage. That's simply not possible. We can only find solutions together with governments as far as that is concerned, how we can create a system where we as insurers, we can certainly do customer service, we can do the management to a certain extent, we can also assume risks. But I think the majority of the risk will have to be shouldered by the government and cannot be shouldered by a private insurance company. At the end of the day, we will have different solutions. But it's a topic that we've got to work on and that we have to find solutions for. Whether we can find solutions, we will see. But it's a good thing that the minister tries to contribute to the solution. He's part of the solution, because the private companies cannot shoulder that alone. Okay, thank you very much. I'll pass that on.
Thank you. So we have two questions in the English line, and we'll...
Wir kommen nun zu Fragen aus der englischen Konferenz.
So our first question comes from Catherine Sheen from Insurance Insider. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my question. The first point is just a clarification, really. If you could just clarify what your 2020 outlook for operating profit for the P&C division was. And my second question is to do with liability losses from COVID-19. The numbers you've given so far are for short tail classes, and I wondered whether you had any view on when the losses for the longer tail classes, such as D&O, might start coming into your results. Thank you.
Yes, so the first question is the outlook for property casualty is 5.6. That was the outlook that we announced at the beginning of the year. And then on the D&O financial line losses, no, we don't have a sort of, you know, outlook for that. We think that should be very manageable. That's our expectation at this point in time. So to a certain degree, in our numbers, we have incorporated also some impact coming from D&O and financial lines, but we think it shouldn't be, at least for our business, there shouldn't be a primary cause of losses.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, then, next question, please.
This question will come from Ben Dyson of S&P Global Market Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering if you could about the impact on reserving for virus on the P&C side, and whether, you know, whether you've had to increase reserves in the first quarter, or whether you're expecting to do so for either for claims incurred or for incurred but not reported claims.
Ah, yes. I would say, you know, the impact we are referring to is mostly coming from incurred but not reported. In reality, the amount of claims we've seen is very limited as of March. So what we are talking about is more what we have not seen yet, but we expect is going to be reported. Otherwise, you know, the COVID crisis impacting most of the countries, you know, starting March, mid-March, so you don't see a lot of claims coming through, at least not at the end of March. So the amount that we are referencing is mostly due to incurred but not reported reserving.
Okay.
All right. So I think wir schauen mal noch kurz in die deutsche Leitung, ob es noch.
We'll take a look at the German line to see if there are any additional questions.
Yeah,
Yes, we do have a follow-up question in the German conference. Would you like to take that? Yeah, we'll be glad to. Jean-Philippe Lacour again, please. That's the last time, I swear. Nat Cat, in the first quarter, if you could tell us where the big damage occurred. I think it was Australia and the UK. If you could tell us what it was. In Australia, it was the fires. In Australia, the bushfires in Australia. Yeah. We had the bushfire because you mentioned that in Australia. We had about 40 million and we had storms. We had in Europe, we had more than 200 million losses on storms. And the biggest impact comes from Sabine, the storm Sabine. And then we had 160 million also for storms in Australia. So 200 million basically from Australia because of storms and a bit, little bit of brush fires. And then we had a little bit more than 200 million losses for storms in Europe, mainly Sabine. But Sabine was also Ciara in the UK. And then we had a small tornado. That happens all the time, basically. And so if you lump that all together, we're talking about some 500 million burden in the first quarter. These brush fires in Australia, how much? 40 million. That was 40 million. Okay, thank you. And as far as I can see, we're done. I don't see any other questions here. Then I would close the telephone conference. Thank you very much for your time and for your questions. And we will hear each other again in Q2. Goodbye. Thank you.
This ends today's conference. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you and goodbye.